On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. I'm not sure if you can hear the storm that's going on here in Florida behind me, but I just ran into the closet to do the intro right now because there's a storm seriously coming and our lights were kind of flickering. So hopefully we'll make it through this with the power still on. So a couple of things before today's episode. Thank you to the people that went and watched last week's episode on my brand new YouTube channel. If you haven't discovered the video there yet, I just started doing them last week. My plan is to edit and upload a bunch more videos from the back catalog of podcasts, but I haven't gotten to that yet. So for the moment, I'm going to be adding definitely every week. When a new podcast goes up, it will go up in all the podcast platforms it always has. And then in addition, the video of the conversation will go up on YouTube. So I hope it'll just make it more accessible for more people. Like, some people just aren't podcast people. So if you're interested in going checking out the YouTube, there's a link in the show notes where you can go and watch it. So the other thing is, if anybody has a couple of minutes to go and follow the show or subscribe to the show, depending on which platform you're on. Also, ratings and reviews are really great. All of those things just really help the podcast to grow and to reach more people. For people who are following me on Instagram, I'm doing a giveaway this week at my Sleep Apnea Stories account on Instagram. There's a reel there and it says giveaway on it. It's pretty clear which one it is. So if you go find that reel, it's got instructions on how to enter the giveaway. And so I'm giving away a copy of my workbook, the 6-week CPAP Solutions workbook. I'm giving away a couple of packs of VIO2 mouth tape, which is just one of the best mouth tapes I find. For some people that, you know, don't like a chin strap with their CPAP, mouth tape can be a good option. A VCOM. I've talked a bit on the podcast about the VCOM by SleepRes. We talked especially with William Noah, who was the inventor of that. So we're giving away one of those. And also my favorite backup battery, which is from X-Pro. So they very kindly gave us a backup battery. So that's the one that I use for travel and for power outages. So if you're interested in entering that giveaway, just go to Instagram and find my Sleep Apnea Stories account, and you should find the giveaway reel right there. So on to today's guest. Today's guest is Kath Hope, who is the founder and CEO of the UK charity Hope to Sleep. We actually split this into two parts. So it kind of ends today partway through our conversation. So today's episode is all about Kath's journey to diagnosis with severe obstructive sleep apnea. And then next week's episode will be more about how she started her charity and how they help patients with obstructive sleep apnea in the UK. So super great conversation, and we talked and talked and talked. So I'm sure you're going to love Kath's Hull accent as much as I do. I just could listen to this woman talk all day. So right. Kath, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for asking me, Emma.
Right. I was just saying before we came on air that I feel quite over familiar because I feel like I've known you for a long time, but this is the first time we're chatting.
Yeah, well, this is how our condition is, you know, even on the other side of the pond, and we're just
Yep,
all connected
we
together because
are.
of the internet,
I
which is a
love it.
fabulous thing.
So
Yeah, same.
I first heard about you from Gary Knight, who
Oh,
I
yes, Gary, yeah.
interviewed on the podcast a long time ago, probably like
That's
3 years
right.
ago.
Yeah, I
And
remember.
he was like, "Well, you know all about Hope to Sleep and Kath." And I said, "No." So that's when I first discovered you. But since then, I've heard really nice things about you from all sorts of patients. So that's good.
Yeah.
So why don't
Yeah.
we start out with your own journey with sleep apnea? So was there a particular time in your life that you started noticing some symptoms? Did you know anything about sleep apnea? Like, how did that all start out for you?
Right. It all started out by my daughter, Katie. Yeah, well, when she was first looking into nursing, of course she was on Google a lot, like we all do. And I remember one morning when she said to me, "Mum, you," she shouted from her bedroom, "Mum, you've got sleep apnea." I thought, "What's she been reading now? Mum, I'm telling you, you've got sleep apnea." "Yeah, okay. Oh, thanks, Katie. Okay." Didn't even look at her. 5 years later, I got
Oh, wow.
diagnosed. And it was very, very lucky for me. Yeah, so what had happened was I was having trouble with my ears. They always seemed to be full. My GP sent me for a referral. You know, obviously, it's the NHS here in the UK. And so I went for the appointment with Mr. Smith, and when he called me through, he examined, you know, down the back of my throat, my nose and everything, about my ears. And then he happened to say to me, "Do you snore?" So I said, "Yes." He said, "Does it bother you?" I went, "No, I'm asleep." So he said, "Ah, right. Well, let me ask you, do you feel very tired during the day?" I said, "Yes, but I'm a very busy music teacher and, you know, I work all hours." So he said, "What about when you just sat somewhere with not much to do?" I said, "Waiting for my appointment with you, I did almost fall asleep in the waiting room." He said, "I am suspecting that you've got sleep apnea." And he said, "That is far more important than your ears. I don't want to take this appointment any further because the fullness in your ears could all be linked with the sleep apnea. And it could be that if I am right, once you go on treatment for sleep apnea, the ear issue could sort itself if it doesn't come back to me."
Right.
So, what a waste of time, because what I should have said before I started this journey is that for years and years, my own GP was very, very good. He used to try and get to the bottom of my problems. And my main problem was, which we thought was because I was a workaholic, I worked all hours, you know, 85 pupils a week is quite a lot for a
Yeah.
single music teacher. So what used to happen about every 18 months, I would literally physically collapse with exhaustion. I remember one time it was dreadful, you know, because it was from February to May, I couldn't leave the sofa. Every time I left the sofa, you know, I would just shake from head to foot. I thought I was having a breakdown, and that was the worst time. Oh, and I had glandular fever. Yeah, I said
So
that
in
because it was
America, they call it mono, I think. So
but
you're
glandular
very
fever.
exhausted.
Yeah. And what happens with glandular fever is it doesn't always show up in your blood at first. So this was that particular time I'm telling you where I couldn't even move for 3 months off the sofa, February, March, April. Yeah, 3 months. But it was a good year before I was properly better. And it was the third blood test when I'm getting better that finally showed it was glandular fever. But that happened even with it, without it being glandular fever, and I developed panic attacks.
Oh,
It,
goodness.
yeah, I wouldn't say depression, apart from when it lingered. Anyone gets depressed when, you know, you're grounded and you're not that
Yes.
type of person. But it was mainly with me, it was panic attacks, anxiety, and you know, it did get really bad. It, you know, I had to have counselling, and I had counselling for more than a year. every week. And I will always be grateful for that. And I would always suggest
anybody. It make a huge difference.
Absolutely. Never be afraid. I thought, you know, a bit of a stigma, but I'll talk about it.
Especially in the UK.
But, you know, thankfully there's, you know, a lot of good things are happening now in, well, Roman Kemp, I don't know if you know him, in the USA, he's very famous over here. He's been diagnosed, it was all over the media, with sleep apnea. I think it was about a couple of years ago, and I noticed he's doing a real lot about mental health with men. What I don't know is whether, because it's hard to get to these people, you know, the when they're obviously in the limelight, I know what that feels like. You know, he's obviously had some mental health problems himself, and I would guess that a lot of this was when he was undiagnosed for sleep apnea. As I was saying, I will always be grateful to my counsellor. It was provided by the NHS because he helped give me the tools, really, the coping
skills.
Because I still didn't know I had sleep apnea then. And, you know, I mean, it's looking back in hindsight, it explains why both times with my children, I got really postnatal depression, we call it here. And because I was obviously, your sleep apnea is worse when you're, you know, pregnant and hormonal. And then you've got to go with all the lack of sleep on top of what we're already living with, unbeknown to us. So all of that makes sense as well now.
I'm just nodding a lot because I had one pregnancy undiagnosed and untreated, and I had another pregnancy after diagnosis and treated with CPAP. And I mean, like, you're still dealing with a newborn and disrupted sleep, but you're getting oxygen to your brain, which I think just... I felt really different between the two different pregnancies.
That is ever so interesting, Emma.
Yeah.
That is very, because you have the two comparisons. I don't. You know, so for me, pregnancy and delivery was not
so hard.
A nice experience because it was spoiled by the lack of sleep and how it affected me, you know. Yeah, definitely. I love my children, but I did enjoy the pregnancy. So I, like I say, my doctor tried, this is what I was saying, isn't it? This is, my doctor tried to find out what was wrong with me because there wasn't anything specific in my life to cause all this. And it wasn't in my nature to be like that either, you know.
I can relate so much to that because I remember explaining to the doctor, I'm waking up with my chest pounding, feeling anxious before anything's even happened, before I've had a thought.
You
know, which is not normal.
Now that is ever so interesting. And it, and that is important to point out, Emma, because I didn't have that.
Now,
you did. And some people, and this is why some people think, oh, well, it can't be me.
So what, tell us about your experience then.
Because I didn't have any experience of, regarding my sleep. And every time I went to my GP, he would say, how's your sleep? And I would say, I can sleep for England. I could sleep forever. I could sleep for 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. But I didn't feel any better for it. But I didn't wake up, like you're saying, with a pounding heart. So that's another thing that puts people off getting a diagnosis.
Doesn't have to be like that.
Absolutely. And it doesn't. Some, I can count on one hand the amount of times my sleep was disrupted by sleep apnea.
Very interesting.
Twice I remember jumping out of bed because I had cramp. I can't I didn't wake up choking.
But you just didn't think it's anything to do with your sleep.
And I used to say to my doctor, no, there's nothing wrong with my sleep at all. And so he you know, wasn't on the scent. And so it's my GP, it was fabulous, absolutely fabulous. And he would send me off for, you know, one test after another, test my thyroid. He tested me for diabetes. He, you know, went through all the things. And I even at one point were being tested for leukemia. And this, you know, and every test came up negative every test. Yeah. And so in my head, I'm thinking, well, I've just got a mental problem, you know, some sort of anxiety.
Cool.
That makes you worse because you haven't got a reason for it.
Right.
You know, I bounce back because the GP would put me on antidepressants because his words were, we can either call this mental exhaustion or ME. This is going back a long time. They know a lot more about ME, but they didn't back then. So he said, there isn't anything I can do to help with ME, but if we call it mental exhaustion, we'll put you on some antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
And those antidepressants did work. Now, eventually. So I was on and off. You know, this is how I went on.
Same. Fair play to my doctors over the years, but I'm one of those patients where I went on antidepressants, felt better, came off antidepressants, felt worse, went on antidepressants, of that. So, and I think it's one of those things that's super personal. Like for me, I have felt so much better being on antidepressants and doing the counseling therapy one-on-one with somebody. Yeah. And that's what's worked for me. So, I mean, I kind of like to talk about it.
Important to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I've got another theory, Emma. So, example, the very first antidepressant I was put on was called amitriptyline. Now, they use amitriptyline for pain as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look up amitriptyline, do you know what it does?
I've never heard of that drug.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite a popular one. I think you will know it there, but it's an I'm going back years. Old-fashioned antidepressants they used because it helps with pain as well.
Mm-hmm.
So look up those type of antidepressants, what they do. They limit REM sleep. So they're reducing your REM sleep. Mm-hmm. What does a reduction in REM sleep do? Gives you less apneas. Because you're not going into REM.
Right.
So that is another theory why it's not brilliant sleep, because we all need REM sleep, as we know.
Right.
But it will have lessened the apneas.
If you think about it. Of course, you knew nothing about.
Oh, no, this is all in hindsight. This is
but
all
you started to feel a bit better once you got
on
there.
Yeah, and then I'd go back and then I'd go. You see, I am a workaholic, so I'd go full pelt into it, never learn a lesson, and then it would happen again. And it was usually about every 18 months.
Yeah, that's basically my 20s too. I mean, really, we're kind of twins.
definitely. Yeah. And anyways, I wanted my ears sorting. But I'd better humour Mr. Smith.
Yeah.
So off I
went. So he sent you for a sleep study.
So he referred me to a chest physician in, you know, our city who deals with sleep apnea.
Right.
So I went off to him and he had a word with me and he said, yeah, listening to what Mr. Smith said, I do think we need to test you. So off I went to the sleep clinic.
In lab, overnight?
No. Not here. That is not common over here.
Okay, interesting.
Very few sleep labs, you know.
Okay.
Some of the bigger hospitals, it was, you know, full kit, you know, buzz and wired open, but had to put it on at home.
Home sleep test, but it had the cannula
The whole works. Yeah. The whole works, chest belt, everything.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did that, and I'll tell you what I don't like. They go, what time do you go to bed? Well, I've always been a night owl, so I thought, well, you know, I'll be good and I'll say 12, which was usually about 1
right
at the time anyway. But I don't like being told when I have to go to bed, but because this recording was coming on, you know, I went to bed, and of course then you're supposed to sleep, so I couldn't fall asleep. So I thought, well, they won't get much from that. So it was just one night, and then I had to take the equipment back the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't think it was very successful because I didn't sleep as good as I usually do. So, you know, and so the clinic said, don't worry about it because we don't expect you'll have it. But we had to do the study because the consultant asked us to.
Yes. Are you a new or struggling CPAP user? Are you waking up and flinging your CPAP mask across the room in frustration? Maybe you have mask leaks, skin irritation, or wake up with a dry mouth. You might be dealing with uncomfortable trapped gas from swallowing air or hair breakage from your headgear. If any of this sounds familiar, you're not alone, and I wrote a workbook just for you. The 6-week CPAP Solutions workbook is out now and has been designed to give you solutions to all the most common CPAP problems. Visit sleepapneastories.com to order now. That's sleepapneastories.com.
So then I get a letter in the post, and it's going to go and see the consultant. So my husband said, do you want me to come with you? I went, no, it'll just be to tell me I haven't got it. It'll send me back to Mr. Smith.
You're fully expecting to like, this is a waste of time. Can you fix my ears?
Absolutely, yeah. So I got off a tootles to the, to my appointment. And so I goes in and he said, yeah, well, all right. So I said, what do you mean? He said, yes, you have. You've got sleep apnea. I went, no, I haven't. I can't have. He said, oh, yes, you have. I said, well, it must be mild. He said, oh, no. He said, it's severe. He said, it showed us that you were stopping breathing 32 times an hour. So I went, I think you've got the wrong patient. So I was right in denial.
Yeah.
And so said it was paper notes then, it wasn't on the computer.
Yeah.
So he sent the notes round and he said, could you just check those details? Is that you of that address? So I went, well, it is. He said, we haven't got it wrong. You've got severe obstructive sleep apnea. So I went,
well, and at that point, did you know anything about, so your daughter said 5 years before, I think you have sleep apnea, and he's sending you for testing. Did you know anything about it? Or
absolutely not, because no. in my head, my daughter was talking a load of rubbish because she'd read something silly on Google.
Right.
I knew that it involved snoring, but that was the only thing. I honestly didn't expect it would be sleep apnea. And not severe either. And anyway, so I was in a bit of denial there. And he said to me, so I said to him, right, okay, if you're telling me, oh, it was explaining how sleep deprived I am and all this. I said, if you're telling me I'm so sleep deprived and I've got severe sleep apnea, can you tell me why I'm a night owl and go to bed too late, usually about 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
So he went, yes, it's simple. So I went, what do you mean? He said, because subconsciously, you know, your bed is a dangerous place. Well, that really shut me up. It really did. I thought, flipping. You know, so I was absolutely in shock. And then I came home and did more Googling myself. And I saw these horrendous pictures of the, I can picture the image now. And it was a man with this great big tube coming, out of this horrendous big mask, because that's what they were like then.
Yeah.
And all I thought was Elephant Man. I just thought, gosh, surely not.
Right.
They're not expecting me to wear that. So then how it put it in perspective, because at that time it was not well known about.
Yeah.
It probably was a lot more in America. But it wasn't.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think so. Like, because I was diagnosed in 2008. And that's part of why I started a podcast and everything, because I just never came across, like, all of my doctors were really surprised that I had sleep apnea as a woman. Yeah. And, like you were saying, like an average weight. So I feel like things are changing a lot now, but back then, not so much, so.
But it was rare. I felt a bit of a freak, if you like, because I had this rare condition. And obviously, we know it's not now. There's 8 million of them in the UK.
But you didn't have any friends or family members using CPAP or talking about it or any of that.
Absolutely.
I was the same.
And as I'm on your podcast, I would like to thank every American who came to my help. Dr. Park, Kimberly Turner, there was lots of them who helped me because there was no help here in the UK.
Yeah.
There was no support, back then. And it was me American friends, who I obviously became friends with, who helped me, you know, because the next part of my story is that I told my dad. He said, "What is this sleep apnea then?" So I explained what it was and about how you snore. Not everybody snores, but right. The common, most common is a snorer, and how you would snore and then jump or, you know. He went, "Crumbs, your mum had it." I went, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yeah." Well, I remember myself, my mum was a horrendous snorer. And she was so bad, it used to vibrate the radiator in my bedroom as a child. And then the noises she made, it wasn't just snoring, it was grunting and everything. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the noise would stop. So I thought, "Oh, I could go to sleep now." So I would just be on the verge of sleep and she'd start again. So I knew without a doubt, well, my mum had that sudden heart attack, fatal heart attack, at age 49.
Oh, bless her.
And yeah, if only we knew.
So sorry for your loss. That's terrible.
It's one of those things, we couldn't have changed things because we're going back a long time. She's been gone about 35 years. What would they have done back then?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
CPAP was barely here.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't. You know, like it is today.
Yes.
My mum was claustrophobic, again, another sign of people with sleep apnea, not for me, but for many. She would never have coped, you know, back then with the horrendous big bubble mask.
Right.
It's just one of those things. I don't feel bitter because life has moved on. Yes. I'm sad.
So glad you got your diagnosis, though.
But that was why I knew I needed to cope with this treatment no matter what, because my son Alex, he was only about 8, I think, at the time. I had quite a big gap because the pregnancies weren't good ones for me. and so I knew I had to treat this no matter what, because nowhere did I want history repeated itself.
Yeah.
My mum died when my daughter was a babe. She was barely one. She'd just learnt to say grandma. And then my mum was no more. It was a sudden heart attack, no second chances. And I was frightened then because I thought, whatever it takes, I've got to make this work.
Yeah.
Because otherwise history might repeat itself.
Yeah.
And that is why I was desperate, absolutely desperate to, you know, get this treated.
So the doctor that gave you the diagnosis, so are they, how does it work in the UK? Are they then referring you to somebody who gives you the treatment option, or how does that work?
Yeah. Well, it all works in it within the NHS. So
together with people talking to each other, which is amazing.
Yeah. well, not quite amazing. We've got a lot of problems. So what happened? The chest physician, at the time, you've got to bear in mind, sleep apnea wasn't as common as it was now. So he was a chest physician dealing with, sadly, giving people cancer diagnoses before me, literally, as I was waiting to see him for my sleep apnea diagnosis. But he worked within the sleep clinic. So that's when... and passed back to the sleep clinic into the physiologist's hands, who then got, you know, gave me the, because we get the CPAP machine, we don't have insurance, we don't need insurance, I mean.
Right.
But there's pros and cons for that, because you have to have what you're given.
Yes.
But we're grateful in the NHS because, you know, we do at least get...
There's no cost to the end user.
No, there's no cost. No, that's right. I mean, sadly, because of the long waiting list now, you know, the way things have gone, some people do, you know...
end up paying out of pocket for things.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, back then, but there was a delay. So there was a delay. I think the delay was something like October to March before I could get the CPAP machine.
Yeah.
Because it had only just been approved on NICE, the NICE guidelines, who guide the hospitals of what...
Which I'm familiar with, just because of our friend Vic Beer, when they updated the NICE guidelines. I think he did a video about that. And, and so then I was like, what are these NICE guidelines? And then I went down a rabbit hole about that.
Yeah. Well, the nice guidelines we were stakeholders in at the charity that I run, the Hope to Sleep charity, and we helped with those nice guidelines because the problem was not everyone was getting treated.
Yeah.
So a lot of good changes came from the nice guidelines. Which,
and so, so to explain for people who aren't in the UK or maybe haven't heard of that, my understanding of those guidelines is that the person who is seeing the patients can use those when they're looking at treatment options, and it kind of helps them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because on the latest guidelines, they brought in other things. They actually said that mandibular advancement devices could now be given. They already were in some hospitals, but it wasn't on the guidelines. It's on the guidelines now. Yes. And so is the night shift. We sell the night shift at the charity.
Which is a positional therapy device
that
encourages people to sleep on their side.
That's right. And things like the neuromuscular stimulation, that could be looked at. So, that I mean, it's still very early because not a lot of them realise those options are there.
Right.
So
that's good to have them on the guidelines so that, you know, people have options.
That's it. So with me, NICE had only just approved it. So each hospital, because there wasn't many people getting diagnosed back then, the hospitals had to get approval from within the hospital to have these CPAP machines. So I did have a wait. Now, that is not nice. And that does happen, sadly, where sometimes clinics are giving a diagnosis and they'll say, we can treat you in a year. That is very, very sad.
Yeah.
I would actually rather not have the diagnosis until they could treat me, because I made the mistake of repeating in front of my young son that I was stopping breathing 32 plus times an hour. So poor Alex was out of bed all the time, looking at his mum, hovering over me. He said I was like a goldfish, up like that, and he would nudge me. And then I'd, you know, stop. And I might add, my husband just carried on sleeping next to me. And Katie in the other bedroom won't bother.
Yeah. It's like my youngest daughter, I can't remember what she heard. She heard part of me interviewing somebody who had lost a loved one. And after it, she was asking me about, you know, do people die? And I kind of said, like, sometimes the people don't get treatment, but mummy has, you know, that's why I wear my CPAP, and, you know, my sleep apnea is treated. And so that's why, so that I don't worry about dying. But somehow that stuck with her. And so if I'm like, I don't ever fall asleep without my CPAP on, but even if I'm on the sofa kind of watching a movie and just like half closing my eyes, I know I'm not going to fall asleep. But same thing, I'll open my eyes, she'll be hovering over me like, are you going to bed? Do you need to put your CPAP on?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, before I was diagnosed, before I was on CPAP, those are the times I did fall asleep. I wasn't falling asleep during the day, I was too busy.
Yeah.
But as soon as I sat down, and I would sleep, and then it was mainly Alex again, you know, looking after his mum. And he would come and he'd be nearly crying, trying to wake me up to get me off that sofa. Not, we didn't know about sleep apnea. I couldn't be woken. That was the problem. I would go into such a deep sleep. Mm-hmm. So I never had a nap. My, you know, when I fell asleep, it was for hours.
So you waited that time, but then you got CPAP? So tell me about that.
Yeah, so, well, I remember, I'll just tell you about my GP. All of a sudden, that's something else, we were talking about this in the group the other day, is that I was always ill with chest infections. You know, I used to get a lot of tonsillitis, pharyngitis, laryngitis, I think you call them all, strep throat.
Yeah,
all that. Those are the type of things I ailed. One lot of antibiotics never got me better. The older I got, the more it went on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said in our support group, I've just found an amazing benefit. She said, I used to always be ill, and I used to always, with chest infections and things, and pneumonia even, needed lots of antibiotics. She said, I've just had a real bad infection, and it just went within days. Is that because I'm on CPAP? And I said, that was one of my stories. That was the biggest thing I noticed. And I honestly, since 2007, can count on, again, one hand, how many antibiotics I've had.
Literally in real time going, oh my word, me too. Because yeah. That's something I haven't really ever thought about. Like, I think I just kind of thought I'd somehow grown out of that. But I suppose it does coincide with when I started CPAP. Like, I used to have, I mean, before I had my tonsils out at age 19, I had tonsillitis multiple times a year.
Yeah.
And then during my 20s, I would just like have, you know, colds that wouldn't shift.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think probably because you're not getting restorative sleep. And so your body just can't get over
it. Your immune system's rubbish. Your immunity is rubbish. You know, there's probably a lot other reasons as well.
Yeah, for sure. But that's kind of interesting.
That's the bit, and the fact that you're getting sleep. We all need sleep to heal, whatever we're healing from, mind or body. And we're not getting that, even though we think we are. And it's your immune system. And honestly, that, you know, was the biggest thing. So I won't go back to my GP anymore because I didn't need him.
Right.
And then, I can't remember what it was even for. But I walked into his office and he just sat back on his chair and went, well, I'll be damned. So I said, what? He said, this sleep apnea diagnosis. He said, if only we'd have realised, we could have saved the NHS all that money and all them tests you've had over the years. And at the time, he told me that he only had, I think it was two or three, including me, people in the whole of his practice with sleep apnea. My GP was fabulous. Every time I visited him for anything, he would have me in that office for a good 45 minutes, pumping me for knowledge about sleep apnea.
And that happens to me too.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
And by the time he'd retired, he had hundreds of people.
Yeah,
because
one of my primary care physicians here, so similar to the GP, she one time said to me, pretty much everything she knows about sleep apnea, she's learned from me, just from coming up every time and me telling her stuff that she didn't know. Yeah, no, we are.
Yeah, on different.
I think partly because we're both chatters.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, that's true. And I'm very inquisitive as well.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode of the podcast, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, I'm over on Instagram. My handle there is sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe or follow, rate and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.